the data center boom and the AI boom, which is consuming so much more electricity than we would have ever thought.
What does the future clean, reliable, affordable grid look like to you? What's the vision?
Grids really have become the bottleneck, not only of the energy transition, but really of economic growth. I can't think of a single country that has more than enough grid capacity.
We want to ensure that there is a reliable, resilient, affordable grid for people to tap into.
Is there any utility that is fully there? Absolutely not.
What do you expect to be the top grid headline in, let's say, 5 years from now, 2030, 2031?
I think no headline is the best headline here. As long as grids are making the headlines, there's something wrong.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Power Perspectives. I'm Kinsey Grant Baker. What are the key challenges facing utilities in 2026? Capacity, modernization, digital twins, customer satisfaction, the list of roadblocks is long. But the tech solving them is adept, and increasingly, it's autonomous. So, what kind of tech should we be paying closest attention to? What will revolutionize the way we think about grid mod? And what might it be able to do without constant human intervention? That's what we're talking about today. We're going to have a future-oriented conversation exploring how autonomous grids can modernize our power systems and solve key energy challenges to create a more intelligent, more agile energy reality globally. We're excited to partner with Siemens Grid Software on this episode, so make sure you stick around to hear more about their work. Now, I'm thrilled to introduce our guest today. Sabine Erlinghagen is the CEO of Siemens Grid Software. As a passionate advocate for the energy transition, she is widely recognized as a trailblazer in grid digitalization and is deeply committed to creating positive economic and environmental impact. Sabine, welcome to Power Perspectives. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. What a great day, and thanks for hosting the session.
Of course, I'm excited for this conversation. I mean, autonomous grids are two really exciting words to pair together. We're going to have a great conversation, but I want to start with just hearing a little bit more about your role, your team. Can you talk to me a little bit about what some of your biggest priorities are this day? You know, what are you most focused on?
At Siemens Grid Software, as you said, the vision that we are all working towards with a team of roughly 2,500 people is making autonomous grids a reality. That is so much needed these days. As you said, the challenges are amplifying, and we haven't even talked about data centers and more connections to the grid, the complexity rising from DERs. And we're deeply committed to not only go the incremental innovation path, but really introduce the useful disruptions that will help us tackle those challenges in a much better way.
I want to start by getting a little bit more perspective on some of the challenges. Obviously, the technological innovations are going to be the bulk of this conversation, but let's define the challenge before we really get into the solutions. A lot of them I listed off at the beginning of this conversation, you know, capacity, modernization, technology like digital twins, meeting evolving and expanding customer needs and expectations. Let's talk a little bit more about these more specifically. So when we're thinking about something like capacity, can you just characterize a little bit why that represents such a significant challenge for people who are working on the grid today?
Grids really have become the bottleneck, not only of the energy transition, but really of economic growth. Because we see multiple things happening at the same time. On the one hand, you have the electrification of everything. That is electrification of transport, electrification of heating, electrification of industrial processes. And on top of that, you have now the data center boom and the AI boom, which is consuming so much more electricity than we would have ever thought. So the demand has increased significantly. At the same time, the production or generation of electricity is no longer in the places where it used to be. So there are no longer the big coal power plants. Some of the gas power plants are being retired these days. So the whole setup of the grids is changing, making the bottleneck that I was describing even more intense. I can't think of a single country that has more than enough grid capacity that is at the risk of overbuilding, but we are all having connection request queues for adding things to the grid and connecting things to the grid that mount to 2,000 gigawatts in the US alone, 3,000 gigawatts globally. So those are huge challenges. And it's very, very difficult to to build something in 10 years, in 15 years, that has been built in 100 years in the past. So we need to accelerate significantly to overcome that challenge of capacity.
Right. And expediting that build out is certainly a tall order. It also is happening at the same time as a really intense period of modernization and technification and digitalization. All of these things help us to be certainly more efficient, to make progress faster. But I'm curious if they also represent, you know, a challenge when we're thinking about what grid modernization, what something like building efficient digital twins looks like. How is that a challenge that is also part of the solution? Can you tell me a little bit more about why that might be a roadblocker?
And you really said it in the right way. Digitalization is a challenge in itself, but it's also part of the solution to overcome the capacity challenge. Like in good factories, if I have a very modern factory with the same factory, I can create a lot more output because I manage scrap better and I manage the processes much tighter. I utilize the equipment much better. And with grids, it's really the same. So if I can get more power over the same line, if I can use my equipment closer to the physical limits of that equipment in that certain instance, then the existing infrastructure really can do a lot more and create more capacity. And the way to do that is really digitalization, because I need to know exactly at what point in my grid do I have a constraint now. I need to use flexibility of both the production as well as the consumption side to introduce that. And without digitalization, I wouldn't know where we are and I wouldn't be able to make the best choices. And the risk of blackouts or brownouts or any instability would just go up. So proper digitalization is a fast way to increase grid capacity, and it's a way to stabilize the grid as we go.
And a lot of the reason that we feel so strongly as an industry about the promise of all of this digital tech and the promise of all of this grid modernization is because we want to ensure that there is a, you know, reliable, resilient, affordable grid for people to tap into. And I think this is a good way to chat a little bit about some of these evolving customer needs. No longer is the customer a monolith in the grid anywhere in the globe, right? Certainly here in the US and I'm sure in other parts of the world as well. The needs, the expectations are changing when we talk about the relationships that utilities are having with customers. So as our final kind of challenge here, before we get into some of the solutions, talk to me a little bit about what that means in terms of how the industry is attempting to sort of rise to the occasion when we're thinking about these changing needs, the changing customer profiles, and the certainly big differences in what some customers need versus others.
I mean, obviously, the digital maturity of our customers has risen significantly, and there's an expectation of infrastructure just functioning. And it's very hard to explain if I want to make my contribution to carbon neutrality and buy a solar panel that I have to wait for 3 years, or that the process of registering my solar panel in some countries is just very cumbersome and complicated, or that I have to suffer from an outage, or if I suffer from an outage, that there's no information. I mean, if I get my food delivered or anything else delivered, I can track the status like online all the time. But if there's an outage, I have no information whatsoever about what's happening out there, how long it will be, where, how many people are affected. So the rightfully so, consumers are expecting a stable grid. They're expecting proper information if there's no stability given, and they expect to interact with the grid and optimize energy for themselves in the right way. They expect to participate, they expect to offer flexibility, they expect to be real prosumers and to get energy back to the grid as well, with electric vehicles, with own batteries in the cellars. This is only growing. And there's an expectation that is growing, which utilities have to meet.
Absolutely. And I'm curious how that might, these challenges all sort of taken with the holistic view of this is the reality of working on the grid, working in the power industry today, how those might shift in the US versus globally. You know, can you talk to me a little bit about what some of the similarities and differences might be for our domestic power systems here in the US where I'm located versus the power systems of maybe some of our peers in Europe and the rest of the world? What are the main differences to be aware of?
I would say there are tremendous differences. I mean, something that is certainly stressing the US grid a lot more are the data centers these days, because obviously a lot of the AI factory plans these days are planned to be in the US. So that stress on the grid, and that's both the transmission grid as well as the distribution grid, is extremely pronounced. Maybe there's an additional challenge because some of the US grid is particularly old and there's quite an aging infrastructure, but there's other countries who suffer from that as well. I would say in the US, more of the grid is still above the ground versus in some other countries you would have more underground cabling and so forth already. So storms, bad weather events, fires would affect obviously above the ground cabling much more severely than if you had that on under the ground already. Maybe a positive one for the US, I think the prevalence of smart meters, the rollout that has happened there is certainly extremely helpful. But maybe what we haven't done so far to the best extent is make use of that data, really, not only to get a proper bill to the consumer, but also to use the data for managing grids more effectively.
Yeah. And I think this idea of managing grids more effectively is a big part of the conversation about, you know, solutions. So now that we have a solid perspective on what challenges utilities are facing, I want to talk a little bit more about how they're facing them. So let's chat now about some of this, you know, evolution required to meet this moment. The first question that I have here is whether or not we are, you know, suffice to say, on track for the evolution that is needed to meet this moment. You know, we have talked some here today already about the ways that grids are changing, the ways that grids are modernizing. Would you say that we are, you know, lagging behind in terms of these evolutions toward digitalization, or are we on track where we need to be?
I think there's a double challenge to that evolution. The first part of the challenge is that some of the trends we're seeing are really exponential. And like, in the bad side, during Corona, we've learned what exponential means. It's like growing so fast at the end that you have a very hard time or no time to catch up with it. And the demand growth that we're seeing, and for instance, in connection requests, some utilities I'm talking to, they tell me that it has tenfolded in a year or two. So if your processes have been laid out for 100 and now you need to do 1,000 with the same team, it's just there, I think we're lagging behind, and we've been kind of surprised of how quick the uptake in the end has been. Also batteries, how quickly they are coming onto the grid, AI data centers I was mentioning already. And the second thing then is, if you look at utilities, I mean, rightfully so, they are risk averse, because in essence, what they're there for is to keep our grid stable. And in Germany, we learned with a major power outage in our capital, we had a power outage around London Heathrow. We had a power outage in Spain, in the whole country. And there's major events in the US where obviously after storms, people don't have power. And that's when you know how essential power is to people. So it's this transformation is like an open heart surgery. You have to transform and you have to disrupt yourself as a utility while at the same time still serving to those basic principles of you can't afford to lose power. And with that, I think that transformation, both of those trends, like the speed of the pickup as well as this open heart surgery type of transformation, is making it extremely difficult. The recipe is a stepwise transformation. So you try to modularize, you do things stepwise, you build on each other and you build on a consistent path. But that takes time and takes a lot of strategizing around departments. You have operational models that need to be changed. You change your tech stack at the same time. So yes, I would say there's still a lot to be done. to really get the speed of transformation going.
Yeah, I love that metaphor that it's like doing open heart surgery. I've never heard that before. And I think it's really, you know, it's appropriate in this setting that you have certain responsibilities as a grid professional, as somebody who's working on solving these problems that are really, really important and often, not to be dramatic, life or death for a lot of people. So certainly not something to take lightly. And I appreciate you, you know, painting the picture for us like that. I want to talk now about the role that autonomous grids might play in helping to solve all of these many problems that we have talked about today, to help us to, you know, do the incremental change, do the more disruptive change as well. Can you tell me a little bit more first about what it means for a grid to be autonomous?
I mean, autonomous grids to me are a vision. It's not this is the next step done in a day or a month or even a year. But if you look at the underlying challenges, we need to double our grid capacity in something like, in some countries it's 7 years, in other countries it's 10 or 15 years, but it's in that time frame. So you need to create as much capacity. It's impossible to do that only by putting more copper in the ground. It's just like the permitting alone, all of this just doesn't work. At the same time, while you double the capacity, you see an increase in complexity. We already see in feed from the distribution level coming up to the transmission level. So we have two-way power flow all the way up through the transmission grid. We have in feed from a lot of different places. We have profiles that we'd never seen before because there are batteries being placed, there's solar being placed, there's this intermittency. So this complexity paired with the need to run your grids much closer to their limits to get the most out of the existing grid to increase the capacity that way is humanly impossible to manage. It's no longer the expert who has it all under control. It's no longer anybody at any given point in time, especially under stress in a control room, who can just take always the right choices. A grid planner these days doesn't know that's the optimum layout anymore. Before, they had kind of so much expertise, so much experience that they would know. With that complexity, it needs software and it needs guidance and it needs that recommended next step and it needs automation and autonomous decision making for certain steps in the grid to take out the basics and let the human brain focus on maybe the most difficult things. And again, the analogy to driving is pretty good. Because we still want, for a long time, we wanted the driver still to be there to do that, this or that. But we started to introduce more assistance, more sensors. And ultimately, you know, in the US, we have the first autonomous cars really driving in the streets. But it took us a long time. But nonetheless, all these steps are necessary to build the trust and ultimately to cope with the complexity in the grid. So for me, while maybe in cars, it is an option in grids. I don't think that it will be an option in the end. I think it will be a necessity to cope with it.
Yeah. And, you know, not for nothing, those driverless cars in the United States get in accidents a lot less frequently than everyday human drivers do. So, you know, when we're thinking about this future in which autonomous grids, whether, you know, the varying degrees of autonomy kept in mind, certainly, I would love to hear your thoughts on, you know, what sort of gold standard or the high watermark looks like for grid autonomy. Even over the last couple of years, our relationship as just everyday people who use technology has changed a lot in terms of what we expect, what we can accept in terms of autonomy in our own everyday lives. Has that happened with the grid as well? Do you see a shift maybe toward more acceptance of grid autonomy? Is that something that you have come across?
I think certainly the acknowledgement of we need more help and we need more recommended next best actions. We need the software to guide us more. Is certainly something that we're seeing, the reliance on algorithms, the reliance on tech, and especially when we look at connection requests, the pressure is so high. I mean, there's every day a very important industry player, a very important data center provider saying, I need this faster. So there's a big pressure these days that is bigger than any day before to rely on such technologies. And the questions, why are you not needs to be answered. I would say the thinking has shifted quite significantly over the last even month, I would say, to accept that thought. Is there any utility that is fully there? Absolutely not. But do we see certain utilities already taking automated action in connection requests? Even in the control room, there's utilities that we work with which have closed loop actions where there's no human in the loop anymore. And so you build on this, you trust this, and I think we will see a lot more in the next coming month or a couple of years.
Yeah, it's exciting to think about what might still be to come. And I'm sure there are a lot of things that we can and cannot predict. Now, I would love to talk now about some of the potential challenges to autonomy. One that comes to mind for me is ensuring access to really good, high quality, high fidelity data. Can you tell me a little bit more about the role that might play in the idea of building out this option for more autonomy in grids and how the team at Siemens is thinking about that?
And I was bringing into the mix already the golden source of metadata, which is completely underutilized. But I would add that it's data, and a lot of the data, interestingly enough, is there already, but we're not doing enough with it. And then it's the context of data. So unless you have a real digital twin and a representation of the grid in the sense of a true grid model that allows for calculations being made, so you want power flow to be calculated, for instance, then you need the right data, but you also need the right algorithmic to calculate those power flows and to solve in an appropriate time. So it doesn't help me if I can calculate something, but it's always 15 minutes too late, the answer, right? You need this in real time or fast enough to be able to operationalize it and to react in the grid. That's true for market clearance, which is an important part in grid efficiency, but that's also true for any flexibility that you want to buy from the market, any flexibility you deploy. So that timeliness and algorithmic and that true digital twin that is not only a like world map of where the grid is, but something that represents the physics of it, really makes the difference here.
What might be the timeline for getting to something like that at scale? You know, obviously this is not something that's going to happen tomorrow. It's something that will include both the incremental changes and the disruptive changes. But do you have any perspective on what the timeline might be for maybe more prevalent or more common autonomy or moments of autonomy within our grids?
I think the foundations are there. So that digital twin and that representation of the grid is something that we can deploy today. And we do that with many customers already. The challenge that we're already tackling today is the connection between the grid planning piece, the grid operations, and the grid maintenance piece. So connecting all the processes, which is a big part in gaining the autonomy, because it doesn't help if one hand doesn't know what the other is doing. And then it's stepwise adding those applications on top of that digital twin. And some are there, and we'll see a good build up as we speak. And we just launched Flexibility Manager based on this digital twin. And that, to me, is really the thing that changes the dynamic in grid management fundamentally, because it starts with accepting a plan that includes to trust flexibility, and then to operationalize it and to really act upon it when it matters in real time. So I think that is the first workflow where this is happening. And again, we see a lot of switching procedures already being done autonomous by some of our customers, which reliably for quite some time works well.
So as somebody who is, you know, leading a team building all of this, you know, what else do we need to get there? I think we've talked a lot today about some of the technological innovations, some of the more, you know, acceptance of autonomy in the work that we're doing. What about things like, you know, an investment or funding or regulation? Are any of these, you know, considerations for you and your team in terms of how we get to that future grid that we want to build?
I think the first thing is great collaboration with partner utilities, between tech and utility. because the utilities themselves know their processes obviously best. They know their challenges best. And especially, for instance, the shift towards system operations. So from what was a DNO before to a real system operator on the distribution side is really a change in operating models. And you cannot develop tech without the operating model, and you cannot deploy an operating model without the tech. So that is something that we are keenly focusing on, to work with the leading utilities in the market to partner and to build those things in conjunction, so that you seamlessly can change your operating model and you get the right tech to enable that. And then obviously work with a broader partner ecosystem of specialists that are very good at certain processes and make that integration really easy.
So with all of this in mind, Sabina, let's take a moment to look to the future. You know, when you imagine this more intelligent, more agile, more autonomous grid of tomorrow, what does that empower? What does that enable? What does the future clean, reliable, affordable grid look like to you? What's the vision?
I mean, the vision is for me to really be the facilitator for the electrification of everything and ultimately for the energy transition. And for nobody talking about grids being a bottleneck, but grids being a great service to everyone, enabling economic growth, attracting new businesses, new data centers, new enterprises to a certain location where grids are the enabler, and where they are not only technically the enabler, but where businesses can rely on, but they are also seen as something economically very, very worthwhile. And as a contributor for the right affordable price, which again is a big part of that autonomous vision. Because if I can do more with less, if I can run my grids closer to the limits, if I can use the experts where they're really needed and not in repetitive tasks, then it's to the greater good of the users and the affordability of both power and grid.
And certainly very exciting work to be, you know, to be so focused on the grid, not as an economic roadblocker, but as an economic facilitator, is certainly a transformation for our industry and one that I'm excited to see play out. So Sabina, we are toward the end of the conversation here today, and I want to do a quick lightning round with you if you're down for it. So this is just a quick rapid fire section. If you don't mind, answer in a word, a couple words, and we'll keep things light and fun here.
Let's go.
All right. So first question I have for you, what is a grid tech misconception that you want to debunk? What's something people might not get right about grid tech or GridBot?
That we already run a data-driven grid.
All right. I like it. What do you expect to be the top grid headline in, let's say, 5 years from now, 2030, 2031?
I think no headline is the best headline here. As long as grids are making the headlines, there's something wrong.
I like that. I like that a lot. And my final question for you here, do you have any top grid modernization technologies that you want to give a shout out here that, you know, maybe contribute to this autonomous grid of the future? What are some of your favorite tech innovations?
I would say the digital twin, a real digital twin and not something that is on paper, is something that stands out. And then the flexibility manager road is something that is just in its infancy. It's the beginning, but it's maybe one of the biggest transformations that we're seeing in the space of relying on both consumers and producers to contribute to grid stability, really.
All right. What an exciting time to be working in this industry, and what an exciting way to end this conversation. So Sabina, thank you so much for joining me today. I really, really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
All right. And a quick word about our partners for this episode. Siemens Grid software enables power utilities to accelerate and secure the energy transition. Its unique software and service portfolio empowers transmission and distribution grid operators to plan and operate the grid of tomorrow today. To learn more, head to the episode description. And thank you all so much, as always, for listening to Power Perspectives. I'm Kinsey Graham-Baker, and I will see you next time.